This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Watley on KLZ 560.
Good afternoon and welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Welcome, and it is the legal hour with our good friend Kevin Flesh, Flesh and Beck Law. Check out Kevin's website, fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, lawfirm.com. Kevin, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Scott. It's a beautiful day.
Man, I'm telling you, we're here, I think, now for snow's behind us, I think.
I think so. It's starting to melt. Runoff is going on up in the mountains. But yeah, it seems like we're in the throes of sort of spring, summer weather, which is nice because it's been really variable.
So. Absolutely. And, you know, you bring that up with the runoff and the melting, and I don't know if you saw, there was just a gentleman killed in a rafting trip with some Boy Scouts or something up down in Arkansas. And so I wanted to kind of talk about that. You know, everybody goes up and maybe they're doing some different trail rides on horses or whatever. And so when you do those kind of things from a personal injury standpoint, you sign a lot of releases.
You do.
And people, you got to think about that. And we had an incident here, an employee here a few months ago.
Sure did.
Did on a snowmobile.
Yep.
And I called you just to see what the deal was. And, you know, you need to read what you sign and then understand they're good releases.
Oh, yeah, they're very good releases. And, in fact, so the whitewater rafting crowd, the legislature, there's a statute relating to that and what the risks what they're called exculpatory releases. And what that means in legal terms is that you're signing away all your rights, essentially. Mm-hmm. It's similar to the Skier Protection Act. Same thing with horses. There's a statute relating to horse rides and things like that, and the fact that really those industries would not be in the place they are and be profitable without the ability to have a consumer come to them and say, I want to do this activity, and I'm willing to give up all of my rights to make a claim against you when something goes wrong, because that's what happens. And so those exculpatory releases are pretty ironclad. I mean, there's a couple of instances where I've tried to litigate the issues relating to something that the provider has done completely wrong, and it's more than just negligence. It's something that's sort of willful and wanton conduct, and there are some very minor situations that you can get around those releases. But generally speaking, you sign that release, you're taking on all the risk in case you get hurt. And yeah, I mean, the rivers right now are running heavy. Mm-hmm. The Arkansas, I think, especially down near the Royal Gorge, is probably at its limit right now. They're probably day by day.
To allow it.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. So there's a high-end limit. Right. And, you know, 25 years ago when we moved out here, we rafted the Arkansas when it was super high. The day before, they wouldn't allow anyone to raft it, and we rafted it the next day at just below the maximums. And it's a force to be reckoned with. Looking back at it now, I didn't realize how dangerous it was. Mm-hmm. Especially the Royal Gorge section, you're talking significant Class 4 rapids, Class 5 rapids. It's big water right now. And in fact, they're having an issue with the Eagle River through Vail. Mm-hmm. There's some man-made things that they've put in place that, because of the water levels there, are trapping boaters and things. So you've just got to be really careful when you're out there.
So if you're looking for that family deal and you've got especially smaller kids and all, I mean,
you need to wait a month and a half.
You really need to think that through.
Yeah. Browns Canyon, it'll be interesting. I'm going to be up in the mountains this weekend, and it'll be interesting to see I've been watching the flows because I float the Colorado quite a bit. And so the Colorado, generally speaking, when we float it, is somewhere between 1,000 and 1,600, 1,700. That's pretty fishable and is a reasonable float. Right now it's generally midday when the flows are really high. It's close to 4,000. CFS. So it's big water right now. And the river changes completely. The places that are pretty placid and not really dangerous now have big holes in them. And just your margin for error is so, so minimal. And so, you know, you get the professional rafters and you get the guides that are out there. You just want to make sure that you go with someone that's legitimate and understand that when they have you sign that release, you're giving up all your rights relating to it. And it's just, it's the way it is. Your option is either not to do it or sign the release and take your risk. Mm-hmm. And so I always, it's difficult.
Sure.
It's a difficult situation, but you've got to be willing to do it. It's super fun. But right now, the next month is going to be big water. because I think right now we're down in the range. I saw in some of the ranges we're at 100 to 150% of normal. But not of June, of
right,
April.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So, because we were at 400% at some point. So, it's a super fun time to be out there if you enjoy the big water. But if you're not sure, stay away for the next little bit.
So, you go to these activities and, you know, you rent things, ATVs, all these different things in the dunes down southern, man.
So, the big thing with the snowmobiles or the ATVs and all of those sorts of things, the biggest thing that you have to look out for, I think, because I ran into this one time renting some snowmobiles, is let's say you damage the snowmobile. Some of the folks that rent them will allow you to get insurance like you do when you rent a car.
Sure.
And you can pay the extra whatever it is, $25 or $30 a day.
Just probably the best $30 you'll ever spend.
It is, absolutely, because you never know. You get the roll that
thing. It hits you.
Yep.
I mean, whatever.
Yeah, you just don't know. And especially if you don't ride on a regular basis, the likelihood of you doing something to the mode of transportation you're on is pretty high. So consider that. And if they don't have insurance, then you really have to think about whether or not you want to self-insure that situation. The situation that we had with the person in the radio station, you know, she did a lot of damage to the snowmobile. I rolled a snowmobile once off the side of a mountain and broke the fairing and the front. You know, it was $1,700 worth of damage in just a split second, and I've ridden a lot. Mm-hmm. But it was one of those circumstances where it was just, it is what it is, and it was too steep for where I should have been when I should have been there. But you should be really careful. The ATVs, same thing. You've just got to understand that you could have to pay for that ATV in the event that you do something silly or that something unfortunate happens. And it also goes to, personal injuries. If you're driving the vehicle, you're not going to be able to make a complaint against someone for negligence, most likely. So take all of those things into consideration. I have had situations, though, where people, lent or are passengers in, let's say, a side-by-side or something like that.
Right.
You know, there's still the argument to be made of negligence if the driver does something wrong. Those are unfortunate cases because normally it's pretty significant injuries.
Yep.
But, it's just something you've got to consider. And a lot of times homeowners coverage will cover those sorts of injuries with a person that's driving a vehicle like that off the premises. So we would just have to check the insurance coverages.
Right. And that's what we say all the time, just know your coverages. I don't care if we're talking about your auto, home, whatever, storms, hail damage. You got to know your coverage.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. This week I just settled a case for a fellow that it was in an accident, had a shoulder injury that turned out that he had to have a shoulder surgery. Pretty significant surgery in the way of cost. It was close to $50,000 for the surgery. The at-fault party had they had $100,000 in limits. We went to mediation. We were able to get them to tender the limits. And while we were there, he wasn't even sure what his underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage was. In this case, he's got another $100,000 in underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage. So, you know, it was a case where we thought, boy, with all of the subrogation interests and everything else, he probably wouldn't end up much for pain and suffering in his pocket. But it looks like now, because we're aware of the underinsured portion, that we just have to get them to give us permission to settle for that policy limit, but we'll be able to get some more money. So you do have to look out for the what exactly you have in the way of limits.
Right.
A lot of people don't realize, too, if you've got family members that are living with you that have vehicles, there's a specific provision of all of the policies in Colorado that those policies of family members living in the same residence are stackable. So if you have multiple vehicles with multiple family members, those are all limits that you can consider. And most people that are trying to resolve cases themselves don't realize that. And so that's a really big deal. Settled a case 5-6 months ago where we had what we thought was one limit. It turned into five. So it went from a $100,000 case because it was a significant injuries to a $500,000 recovery. So we were able to get a ton of money for the client where that just didn't look like we were able to until we did some research.
Because there's no more difficult conversation for you to sit there after surgeries or after different things and then figure out, wow, there's just nothing left.
Yeah. In fact, the opposite situation I had a few months ago where family of five got hit, person only had $50,000 total. Family had close to $50,000 in medical expenses, and then they didn't have any uninsured, underinsured motorist coverage at all on the day of the accident. So it was a real life lesson for them to make sure that they get that limit, certainly get all that they can afford. And it's relatively cheap insurance for the money, for the, the amount of coverage that you have, because generally you just don't have that happen very often.
Are you seeing just more with our traffic and people living here, just, I mean, if you look back 10 years ago to number of accidents to today's number of accidents, I mean, I can't go 4 or 5 miles out driving before the show here or after without seeing an accident. They're, it's everywhere.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of things going on. Volume, certainly, the fact that there's more cars on the road, and then I think there's just more distracted driving. That's what, I mean, I just saw one 2 days ago coming back from court where I'm driving down and I just hear this smack, and it's, you know, it's on like 150. I think I was on 120th, and it was clear it was a stoplight. Somebody just wasn't paying attention and just rear-ended someone. And, you know, looking at a phone, trying to do two things at once, and just not paying attention. So, yeah, it's a lot of that. And just sheer volume, there's just going to be more of them because of the amount of people that are on the roadways.
Legally, our governor signed in with this whole mushroom deal, legalized and all that, and you got the marijuana thing. What have you seen a correlation between, you know, accidents now, along with the DUI, with the different drugs now?
Yeah, so what I'm seeing a lot on our criminal defense side of the practice is the DUIDs, the fact that people are getting pulled over for something random, and then they also seem to be exhibiting impaired driving. You know, they may have had one or two beers, but then they had some marijuana as well. Or they're a regular smoker, they're a chronic smoker of recreational marijuana. And the officers now are getting more trained, they're becoming drug recognition experts, there's more of those individuals on the roadway that are able to make some determinations to whether or not the person is impaired. And the problem with the THC is it sits in your blood, in your fatty cells of your body. And so even though you may not have smoked for 6 hours, when we get a blood test done, you know, your THC levels may be 12, 15, 18 nanograms in the bloodstream. And that's, there is no specific per se violation of the law, although there are, in the statute it says 5 nanograms or more, there is some ability to argue impairment. Now, the studies have not actually scientifically shown that to be the case, but they're charging you. And so you end up having this cost of defending yourself, and we're getting really good results with some expert fees, with some experts coming in talking about those things. But, you know, a normal DUI case, we may charge $2,500. If I have to go out and get an expert, they're normally another $2,500. So you've just increased, you know, the defense of the matter by double. So you're looking at a $5,000 attorney and expert cost just to get the case resolved. We're not even talking about trial. So it's an expensive thing for people to do. And the best thing that I can say with regard, I haven't seen anything regard to the mushrooms. It'll be interesting to see if that use goes up and that people are more aware of it. But certainly the marijuana, I mean, it's like, it's interesting because people, you know, say, well, alcohol's legal, so I'm able to drink and drive. And there is some truth to that. The people that are really adamant about it are the folks that they say, well, marijuana is legal now, so I shouldn't have any restrictions. And it's just not the case. They still can't be impaired. And the best thing that I can tell people when they do get into that situation where they're pulled over and they haven't smoked for a day or whatever, and they don't feel like they're impaired, don't refuse the test. Do the test so that you can prove you're not impaired, and then get a blood test so that we can figure it out, get it retested, and then have an expert talk about it. Because the worst case is you refuse everything, and then it looks like you're trying to hide something, and the jurors pick up on that pretty quickly. I have more things to work with when you do the voluntary roadsides in a marijuana situation, because you may not be impaired, and we'll be able to show that based upon how you're reacting to the tests.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Let's come back. We'll talk a little more about that. It's the Legal Hour with Kevin Flesch. If you've got any kind of legal question, we'll take your call, 303-477-5600. We'll be right back.
The tingling and numbness in your feet started a long time ago, and it's only gotten worse. It's finally getting to the point where you can't sleep at night. It's starting to affect your balance, and although your doctor prescribed medication, you worry about the side effects. Dr. Dean Anderson, chiropractor with Front Range Medical Center, offers an advanced treatment for peripheral neuropathy that can greatly reduce your nerve pain. Regain feeling and mobility without taking prescription medications. At Front Range Medical Center, Dr. Anderson and his team treat the source of the nerve pain using one of the most advanced forms of electronic medicine to help their patients experience long-term success. You know the problem won't go away on its own. Call Dr. Dean Anderson today and mention Haystack Help Radio to receive a $27 consultation, including a neuropathy-specific exam and a review of your health history. Find out whether or not you could be a candidate for this advanced treatment. Call 720-851-9694, 720-851-9694. You have nothing to lose but pain.
What could you do with an extra $500, $1,000, or even $1,500 per month? How would that change things for you? Would you buy a new car, pay off bills, or just feel a bit more secure about your retirement? What if I told you there's a way to make your dreams a reality? I'm talking about trading and investing in the market. Now, before you say, oh, that's not for me, just hear me out. I want to invite you to a half-day trading course so you can check this out. I promise you, you'll go away smarter than when you came in. We here at Online Trading Academy sponsor this, and we'll even send you home with a free home study video guide. Your money's doing nothing for you in a CD or mutual fund. Learn how to profit when the market's up or down. Call us now while seats are still available at 303-325-2776. Use offer code RADIO50. 303-325-2776. That's 303-325-2776.
David R. Cishon, certified estate planner and registered financial consultant, specializes in working with people who are planning for retirement and retired clients who want to preserve and grow their assets. David is the regional vice president of Householder Group, an independent estate and retirement planning firm. He's been nominated as a five-star wealth manager, an award based on client satisfaction, and is educated on the specific issues and concerns facing seniors today. David has the experience, knowledge, and tools to help you design and implement a strategic plan to pursue your individual financial needs. Call now for your free consultation with David Cishon of Cishon Financial. 720-482-1917. That's 720-482-1917. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Householder Group Estate and Retirement Specialist, LLC, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio. If you're just joining us, my name is Scott Watley, along with Kevin Flesh. It is the Legal Hour, and again, our lines are open. If you've got any kind of legal question, Kevin will answer them for you, 303-477-5600. So you mentioned, not refusing the test on that and all. There's so many things that happen, man. The minute you see the lights,
yeah,
our brains kind of go crazy, because I told you I just got a ticket. First one several years,
yeah,
for me.
Really good.
Yeah, for me. Yeah. Yes. Even though you're not doing anything serious, like in my case, I was just going too fast.
Right.
But I mean, you do, and your mouth wants to start saying a lot of things, whatever. So kind of go through some of the different stops and what to do.
Yeah, so absolutely, because everybody, I mean, it's a presence of authority, right? I mean, you've got a police officer that's coming up to your door. They've pulled you over to lights and sirens, the whole deal normally. So your adrenaline is up. And whenever your adrenaline is up and whenever you're in a situation that you're not comfortable with, most people do not want to have any silence for whatever reason. They feel really uncomfortable. They want to say something, right?
Right.
I don't know, human beings, I think just generally we think that that's a good place to be. Whereas it's exactly the opposite of what you want to have happen. You want to, so in any traffic stop, you want to make sure a couple of things. Number one, if you're pulled over, you know that they're going to ask you for your license and insurance. So when you pull over, make sure you pull over in a place that seems to be safe for the officer to get out of their vehicle. Don't take too long to pull over, because that'll frustrate them as well.
Sure.
But as quickly as you can, get to a place where the officer is safe to get out of their vehicle and walk up to your car. While they're walking up to the car, make sure that your hands are reasonable, that they can see them, and that you're getting out your license and insurance.
I love that. I love that thing you have.
Yeah, and actually we're out of them. So I've got to order and some new ones, and I had just had a listener that emailed me this week, and I will get those out to folks, and we'll get new ones.
What we're talking about is just a plastic sleeve that has Kevin's information on it.
Yep.
Sometimes you might want to call him from right there. But everything's intact.
Yes.
And you're not fumbling through things, dropping things, wondering where you put it last time or whatever.
Exactly. And it's a great place that when you get your annual renewal for your license plates, you can put your proof of ownership in it as well as your insurance, and you just leave it in your glove compartment and you're able to get there. And we also generally will send out the sort of things to do for personal injury case or criminal defense stuff. So at any rate, so you want to make sure that, because the whole idea with this interaction with this officer is they're not pulling you over just to have a cup of coffee or to chat about the weather. They're pulling you over because that's their job, because they believe they have reasonable suspicion that you've committed a crime, and a traffic infraction is a crime at the lowest level. At any rate, so they're going to, number one, you want to keep them feeling comfortable as best they can. I mean, it's a dangerous situation for them to walk up to a car in any circumstance. So they're going to be immediately on edge trying to figure out who they're dealing with, what they're dealing with, and how they're going to handle the situation. All right, so you've gotten your license, you've gotten the registration and the proof of insurance, you have it in your hands, and when they walk up, you roll the window down. Just roll it down all the way. You don't have to roll it halfway down.
I've seen so many videos.
Right.
People doing it 2 inches.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to be able to know whether the officer is an officer or not pretty quickly. If you have any concerns about that, certainly you've got to act reasonably. But putting the window down an inch and not really being willing to talk to the officer immediately puts them on edge. Put the window down and then do nothing else. Wait for them to interact with you. You'll get a sense right away of what the demeanor of the officer is going to be like, whether it's an officer that is interested in having a conversation and maybe teaching you something about your driving, or if it's just an officer that's there to give you a ticket and send you on your way, or there's something else going on. So let's find out what they're going to say. Listen, look at them, figure out what it is that they're doing. Be polite, but don't give any more information than what they ask for. If they walk up to the vehicle and say, license and registration, hand it to them. That's it. Don't make any more statements. And wait for them to ask you a question. And then depending upon what the question is, if the question is something that seems to be asking you to implicate yourself in something, like, for example, a lot of times the officers will be taught to ask an open-ended question like, do you know why I pulled you over? Well, that's going to be a great question at trial in the event that you say, yeah, I was doing like 30 over, and I saw you go by, and I slowed down to 5 over and waited for you to catch up with me. That's probably not something you want to say. If they ask you why you're being pulled over, because you really don't know, say, I don't know. But I don't know. You could, I mean, the smartass in me would say, I'm guessing you're going to tell me, but that's it. I mean, if it's late at night, the other thing that a lot of times happens is the officers are trying to figure out whether or not you've had any alcohol. And so they're not only concerned about the traffic stop that they're having you pulled over for, but they're also looking into investigating whether or not there's something else going on. And so those sorts of interactions, the more you say, the more likelihood they can smell alcohol, that they can get a sense of your impairment. If you don't have your license and registration, then they ask it for it, and you go through your glove box, and you're fumbling around, and you hand them one of your credit cards instead of your driver's license. That's all sort of stuff that will come up in the report to indicate that maybe you're impaired, that you don't understand what your driver's license is versus your credit card. So consider that interaction, and consider that we still have a constitutional right under the Fifth Amendment not to incriminate ourselves, even in a traffic stop. So keep your statements to a minimum. Be polite, find out what the officer wants, and then do what the officer needs you to do. If they want you to get out of the car, if an officer asks you to get out of the car, you have to get out of the car. It doesn't matter what you think about the situation. It doesn't matter whether you think they have any lawful reason to pull you out of the car. You're getting out of the car.
And keeping in mind, too, they make notes on the back of citations for court dates
that
are months down the road, maybe sometimes, about your demeanor. Right?
Oh, yeah. There's a specific section of the back of the ticket that talks about attitude, demeanor, you know, what you were like, what what the interaction was like. And those are all things that the prosecutors look at mm-hmm. sometimes to make, if it's a judgment call, to make a decision about whether you get a further reduction than what you're asking for. Right. And a lot of times, that interaction, if a positive one, will lead you to a positive result versus being difficult, argumentative, sort of standoffish, those sorts of things. The officer will then just hand you a ticket and send you on your way mm-hmm. and say you can deal with. They won't give you, because sometimes they'll give you a deal. Let's say you're going 25 miles over. They have the discretion to give you a ticket for 4 points, 19 over, and then you're dealing with a 2-point ticket versus dealing with a 6-point ticket, which is a major traffic infraction where you have to show up to court.
Right.
Where, I mean, you have to physically go. You can't just, you know, pay the fine in 20 days and call it good. So those are all things that you need to consider. So, but at the same time, they're there to figure out what exactly has happened and then enforce the law. And so they're just doing their jobs. I mean, I get so many people that think that when they come into my office that there is some other things
underlying
underlying reasons, and very rarely are there.
Right.
I mean, the majority of the time, what I see, especially now when we've got so many of the police departments having body cameras and other things, it's such good evidence to see what's gone on. Mm-hmm. And the majority of the time, it's not what the, because it's not what the driver, it's not what the defendant thinks happened. I mean, and you're in a traumatic situation, and the police officer is in control of the situation and does it 10 times a day. You get pulled over once every 6 years. Your reaction is going to be very different than what that officer's is, because that's his job. I mean, mm-hmm. think about, you know, we all do something on a daily basis for our jobs where we may interact with people that don't do it on a regular basis, and think how much easier it is for us to do that and get through it, where it may be real traumatic for somebody else. It's the same thing in a stop, in a car stop or
right.
car accident or anything else. So those are the things that I'd say you'd really want to look out for. And then the last thing I would say is, once you're done with the interaction and you know, I would ask the officer, am I free to go now? Yes. And they'll normally give you some advice as to how you should leave
yeah.
to make sure that they don't pull you over again. And be
I believe Bond said, just slow it down.
Right. And they normally do. Or yeah. they say, you know, this is a tough spot to get out of, so just consider, give yourself plenty of room.
Yeah.
I'll stay here with my lights on to keep people moved over,
sure.
that sort of thing, until you're on your way. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, the biggest thing is, a lot of times there are municipalities and there are counties in this area that definitely have times of the month or certain things that they do to increase their revenues relating to traffic tickets, but it is not your prerogative when you get pulled over by that sort of situation, you know, where you see the motorcycle cops with the guns and then the other motorcycle cop or the police officer next to them. They got three or four cars
right.
and they've got couple people with speed guns, you know you're in a speed trap.
Yep.
But it's also not the time to be arguing with
them. I mean, as you notice, leaving the station, we get up to 225.
Oh, yeah.
You cannot take a ride on red there.
Yep.
And they'll sit over in that parking lot, and son, they've got a convention going
on. No. And they've got four different signs.
I know.
Yeah. But there's people that do that all the time. Oh. I mean, I see it yeah. all the time. And they're big signs, too. So it's not... And it's easy. It's the same thing on Santa Fe
yeah.
going northbound in the morning. There's twice a month, there's a cop that's sitting by the McDonald's there at Mississippi right there, where going northbound in the morning, you have to have two or more people in the vehicle. And there are tons of people that use that HOV lane as just another lane.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll just pull people over one right after another there for that violation. And it happens every month, a couple times a month, and he writes a ton of tickets over it. And it's, you know, you're not following the law. So you can make all the excuses you want, but you're not.
Now, as far as citations, do you recommend normally, and we always use the term fighting a ticket,
yeah.
but I mean, the way insurance rates are today and all the different things, I think it's a good investment to give you a call to have you take a look.
It can be.
And at least you advise, hey, yeah, I think we should do this.
We have a pretty good sense of which jurisdictions will work with us a little bit more than others. You know, sometimes... there are some jurisdictions where you get a 4-point ticket and they'll reduce it to a 2-point non-moving violation, defective vehicle or something else. We have a real hard time in some jurisdictions getting something less than that unless we've got a really good reason for it. So those sorts of situations certainly talk to us about it and see if we can help. Careless driving tickets, though, a lot of times where there's an accident. I've had a number of cases, just settled a case last week where in Lakewood, client got charged with a traffic ticket. They said he was the cause of the accident. We were able to prove in the traffic ticket that he wasn't the cause. Wow. And then we filed suit against the other.
That's a big turnaround.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big deal. And a lot of people won't do it. The main personal injury lawyers that you see advertising and on the billboards and everything else, TV, they won't touch those cases because it's just too much work for them. You've got to try the traffic ticket first. But I think they're interesting, and we add value in those cases. So those are always the situation that we can help out. But we've got to look at them. We've got to scrutinize them pretty closely. Speed cases are tough now because laser is just difficult. It used to be easier with radar because you could fight about the tuning forks and whether they were accurate or not. Laser's really pretty good. And so those are going to be difficult unless you have a high volume traffic situation where you can make the argument that they were bad aim and they hit another vehicle and not yours. And it was a long way out so that the laser is wide enough that you get speed from another vehicle. But some of the other things, I actually just had a case. This is an interesting case. People are starting to put dash cams in their own private vehicles.
Oh, yeah.
And I have a case about a month ago where the kid came in and had gotten charged with turning left in front of oncoming traffic. And he was in the intersection on a yellow, and he turned left as the yellow went to red. First of all, he shouldn't have been in the intersection, but he was. And he had a dash cam. And we were able to prove from the dash cam that the person that he hit coming through the intersection actually came in on a red. So that was a case where I think we're going to be able to make some headway on it to show the dash cam and that they shouldn't have been in the intersection at all, and he should have been able to clear.
Right.
And he's got some injuries, so we may be able to go after the other party for entering the intersection on a red.
So even if you get a citation, and we'll go the accident route now, and you get a citation that it was your fault, that's still worth always.
For sure, and especially relating to restitution issues, because many times Denver, there's lots of municipalities that if you take a plea bargain, you're also stipulating to liability, and then the person can ask for restitution. And those restitution amounts can be medical, lost wages, not pain and suffering, but anything that they can show a receipt for, that the court can enter a restitution order against you. It's offset by your insurance, but let's say you've got $25,000 in bodily injury coverage,
right,
and they have a restitution order for $50,000. You're now on the hook for another $25,000. So those sorts of situations we also are real helpful with. And we're one of the few firms in town that actually understand the restitution statute because we do the criminal defense work and the civil. We get what judges can do and what they can't do, and most firms don't understand that process. So
gotcha.
We can certainly help with that.
Flesh and Beck, fleshlawfirm.com, 303-806-8886, 303-806-8886 is Kevin's number, and I always tell you, put that in your phone. We hope you never need it, but just in case you do, you've got it right there at your fingertips. When we come back, Kevin, let's talk a little bit about what are the biggest mistakes that you see people make after an auto accident. We'll be right back.
Who doesn't want to own their home faster? Can it be done without paying more money? Absolutely. Here's how. Quit paying compound interest. If you borrow $400,000 at 4.25%, you will pay back over $708,000. That's over $308,000 in compound interest. Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. We're hosting another educational seminar at Memory Lane Museum, Tuesday, June 18th at 6:30 p.m. Join us for dinner and a walk through the 50s and the 60s with cars, motorcycles, old-fashioned diner, and more. To reserve your seats, go to aimortgage.com/events. Let us show you how simple interest will save you thousands in excess interest while giving you the ability to access your equity when you need it. Take AIM, 720-895-0500, and join us for dinner Tuesday, June 18th at 6:30 p.m. at the Memory Lane Museum. Go to aimortgage.com/events to reserve your seats. Keep more of your money. 720-895-0500. NMLS 298-191, regulated by DORA, Equal Credit Lender.
Mosquito season is upon us. Don't let mosquitoes keep you from enjoying your summer activities in your yard. At Mosquito Authority, their mission is to help protect you and your family from mosquitoes and the diseases they carry. Did you know that when your dog or cat is bitten by a mosquito, heartworm is one of the most common infections to your furry friend? For new customers, take advantage of the Memorial Day offer. Two treatments for $105, which is a $150 value, running now through Saturday, May 25th. No contracts, no commitments, and best of all, no mosquitoes. Call 303-688-2847. That's 303-688-2847. Or visit mosquitoauthority.com.
After an accident, think about Flesh and Beck Law. After your accident, you didn't think it was a big deal. You didn't think you were injured. You didn't think you'd ever hurt that much. You didn't think you'd have to miss work. You didn't think physical therapy would take so long. You didn't think there'd be so many hospital bills. You didn't think that the insurance company would take so long and give so little. You definitely didn't think you'd ever be in this situation. But you are. After an accident, think Flesh and Beck Law. Flesh and Beck have the experience and the knowledge to think about all the details you didn't know you'd have to worry about. They will answer all of your questions and help you to determine if you are entitled to compensation for your pain and suffering. After an accident, think Flesh and Beck Law. 303-806-8886. 303-806-8886. Call today to find out if they can help you.
Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center offers KLZ listeners complete pet care services every day, all at one location. It's so much more than a clinic and so convenient. Their expert staff is always happy to help your pet have the happy and healthy life it deserves. Schedule a medical checkup for your beloved companion or take the first step toward a better behaved buddy by signing your pup up for obedience training. Did you know that if your sweet kitty needs grooming, Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center is one of the few facilities that offers grooming for both dogs and cats. And if you're planning a vacation, Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center offers boarding for dogs, cats, and other small pets so you can take your vacation without worry, knowing that your four-legged family member's home away from home has a fully equipped medical center on site. Learn more about Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center at LoneTreeVet.com or call 303-708-8050.
Denver's Afternoon Rush. Rush to Reason is coming up at 3. Now, back to Haystack Help Radio.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio and the Legal Hour with Kevin Flesh. If you're just getting in the car or turn on the radio, my name is Scott Watley. We do have Kevin Flesh in studio, and again, our lines are open. If you've got any kind of legal question, we will take your call, 303-477-5600. So, Kevin, after accidents, we talk about this all the time, but there's certain things you want to do. But, I mean, what are just some of the top two or three common mistakes that, man, when I say just kill you, I mean just, that just right. hurts your case so much.
The biggest thing that people do that hurts their case is that they delay their medical treatment. They think that they're going to get better, and guys are probably the worst for this, mm-hmm. Especially when it's not debilitating to the point that you can't work or anything else, and we just think we can power through it. And before you know it, it's a month past the accident, and then they start getting treatment. The second thing that's worse than that is getting treatment but then not following advice and getting periodic treatment over the course of 6, 8, 10 months, or getting advice to get a surgery and not doing it. Those are the sorts of things that I see that just really are difficult, because the insurance company, you get so many arguments from them about, oh, well, maybe something else happened, or it really wasn't that bad, or, you know, a variety of things that they try to suggest that it because there's that causation piece that they
right.
they may admit liability, but then they're like, oh, but our accident wasn't significant enough to cause this injury. The injury that I was talking about with the shoulder surgery, mm-hmm. it was a low impact case. I mean, there was less than $1,000 worth of damage to my client's car. Wow. But in talking with him at the initial stages when he came in, he had his elbow up on the windowsill of the car, and he had his hand rested against his chin. Well, when they hit him from the back, his arm didn't move, and the rest of his body did. And so it popped his shoulder out and caused a labrum tear, caused a rotator problem.
Right.
He waited 4 months to get an MRI, but at least we got something within 4 months.
Sure.
That was still a long time, but he was a guy that had no prior problems with the shoulder, never had any issues, and was in a situation where we had good history on him. So the biggest thing is the lack of treatment. And the treatment is what drives a lot of times the value of the case, too. And it's, if you don't get it, it's makes it very difficult for us to really show value.
Yep. Let's go to the phones. We've got James on the line. James, you're on Haystack Help Radio in the Legal Hour with Kevin Flesch. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for taking my call. How are you doing today?
We're doing great, man. Thanks for listening.
Hi. Yeah, no problem. And thanks for doing this for the community as well. I do have a question. It's not necessarily about car accidents, which is what y'all were talking to a little bit earlier.
That's okay. Any legal question, man.
Okay, so, and it's not necessarily a legal question about me. It's what I need to do. And so I live in a kind of a duplex or a triplex house. And the other day, our neighbor's dog, which is like a pit bull mix, actually bit me.
Yeah.
It bit through my pants, and it kind of nipped it, and it bruised it, and it kind of broke the flesh a little bit. And I'm just trying, I don't want to, you know, have any troubles with our neighbors and everything, but I'm also kind of worried about if there's some sort of legal obligation for me to tell the landlord, if I'm supposed to. So
a couple of
I just didn't know.
Yeah. So a couple of things for you. So you, does the landlord live on premises as well?
They don't. No.
Okay. All right. So the first thing is the dog. What city do you live in?
It's in Denver.
Okay. So Denver has a dangerous dog provision within its municipal code. So the question is whether or not that dog should be in Denver at all if it has a pit bull mix in it. And that would be the first thing that I would be concerned about for you, is because they may not be able to have that dog in the city limits. And it all depends on how neighborly you want to be. I mean, is this a situation where you are concerned about someone else's safety with the dog? I mean, is it an aggressive dog to begin with?
Well, it has been. It's been pretty kind of aggressive, but they always said, oh, it's just a barker, it doesn't bite. Well,
yeah.
That's changed.
Yeah.
But the other thing, I want to be very neighborly. I don't want any problems for them, and, you know, I don't want them to lose their pet. But the other problem is I don't know if there's, like, a legal responsibility that I'm supposed to tell the landlord that, because there might be liability on his end if it comes to find out, you know, there was a dog bite and we didn't report it or what.
Yeah, so what I think would be the best thing for you to do is probably get a hold of animal control and try to make a complaint anonymously about the fact that you've been bitten by this dog. You can give them the information about the dog and see if they'll go over and talk with the owners about it, make sure that the dog does comply with the law, and also that they have all the shots and everything up to date, and probably handle it that way. In Colorado, there's two different statutes relating to dog bites. One is basically related to the owner not being aware of the aggressive tendencies of the dog, and then they're liable for medical bills and that sort of thing. It's when the dog owner is aware of the dangerous propensities of the dog, then you have a situation where they would be responsible for all of the personal injuries. And so I think it would be best that you make sure that they're aware of it, and probably doing it anonymously through the animal control officer is the best way to handle it.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. Great.
Thanks for listening, James.
And that is a really good point.
Yeah, we could do a whole show on different things with dogs, man. Because you see, we go in Cabela's or Bass Pro, and people take their dogs. I mean, you got to understand, you take your dog in a place like that, man, you're opening yourself up. And really, the store is opening themselves up.
Yeah, it is. I've sued Bass Pro. I've made a claim against Bass Pro for a client relating to a dog bite in the store. And it was a hunting dog, and young kid. I've also done it against Petco, PetSmart. I mean,
everybody thinks they know their dog. I mean, but you never know.
You don't. That's exactly right. And the trouble that I have with those situations is there's so many variables about what a dog would do in a situation where it feels worried about its own safety. I mean, I've got a dog in a big golden doodle that loves people, but he's not good around other dogs, especially on a leash. And you get him near another dog where he's concerned about his own safety, he's biting first and sort of asking questions later. So I don't think he would do anything to a human being, but I've never had him in a situation where it's sort of chaos in a store and you got people running around. And the one case that I remember, a kid runs around a corner and the dog is around the corner of a end cap on an aisle.
Oh, yeah.
And the dog just reacted and bit the child. And those are difficult situations because I understand the fact that the individuals who own these stores think that they're going to get more sales by allowing these mm-hmm. dogs in the store, but you have to be really careful about it. And you need to make sure that people that are at the store are aware that there's going to be, I mean, I see dogs in Home Depot.
I know.
You know, is your dog really good at looking at plumbing?
Plumbing.
I mean, why?
Exactly.
I mean, I understand everybody loves their dog, and I do too, but I'm not, sure. It's just one of those situations where you cause.
You're putting yourself in.
You are. Yeah. And the businesses are doing it too, because and this is where people say, oh, you know, personal injury lawyer trying to get to, well, but you're creating a danger. I mean, kids are allowed in stores. And if I have to make a decision between a dog or a child being able to come into a store with their parents, I'm going to pick the kid every time. And the dogs, especially dogs that you're just not sure, or I just think it's a bad policy.
Yeah.
I mean, I just do. I just think it's a dangerous condition.
And I tell you, you look around too. I mean, as much as you drive around, I drive around, I look over. I see people holding their dogs and
yes.
you know, in the front seat.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what the number of accidents are caused by pets in cars, but I promise you there's decent percentage
because, yeah.
man.
They're all the little dogs, too.
I saw one that had a small dog, and they used it kind of as a neck pillow, like we use on an airline, to curl around its neck, and it was sitting up on the headrest around the lady's neck, and I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Right. Your range of motion is going to be much less with the dog behind your neck.
Right.
And that's sort of the distracted driving and sort of the things we really, let's just drive. You know, let's put our phones down. Let's not be playing with our pets. Let's not be reading newspapers.
And hopefully if James has got a good relationship with his landlord, too, you know.
Well,
I mean, try this because I think that's the best way to go about it, too. But if not, just say, hey, dude, I don't want problems, and so-and-so is nice. But
so it's,
the landlord may not even know the dog's there.
Right. So that's the really interesting thing is I've litigated those cases relating to dogs and renters. It's a very – there's some really bad case law out there for plaintiffs that are bitten by dogs in Colorado. And specifically what I mean by that is, number one – you normally can't hold the landlord responsible unless they know about the dog and they know the dangerous propensities of the dog. So, and if the landlord allows the dog to be on the premises, and there's probably a provision in the lease that says that the people that are renting the house or the apartment and they have the dog, they're solely responsible for the actions of that dog. Well, most renters don't have the assets that the landlord would have.
Right.
And at least half of the people that are renting don't have renter's insurance.
Well, would it be a negative thing then? We'll take James's case again.
Sure.
Let's say in a week or two, that dog grabs his calf, doesn't let go, and takes a chunk out of it. Then he goes to the landlord, and he goes, well, this is the second time. Well, the landlord said, you didn't say anything
correct.
To me.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And that's why I was asking about the neighborly comment, because I think it is important you got to balance. I mean, anytime a dog bites a human being, you need to let somebody know about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I had a dog that bit another person, for me, that dog would be out of my household. I just don't have time for dogs biting people.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I would like to say that if I had, I'm really close to the dog and everything else, the dog's got to go. I mean, it's just the way it is. For whatever reason, that dog is not safe now, because now I'm aware that it's bitten someone.
Right.
And I've seen too many cases where dogs have bitten kids in particular that are doing nothing wrong to the dog. And I love people. You see it on social media all the time when a kid gets bitten, that the people come to the reaction of the dog.
Right.
And you just can't do it. I mean, it's not, I understand the argument, but it's an animal versus a human being. And the human being, in my mind, is always going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly we can have people call and say, well, there's some instances where the dog has the right to defend itself, I guess. And I get that. But if not to the detriment of a child.
Right.
And that's generally what we see happen. And sure, it's people putting their heads close to the faces of the dog and they may react.
Yeah, Victoria's always on, because I love dogs.
Right.
And I don't ever see a dog and she's like, don't get your face.
Right.
I mean, you just never know.
Well, you've got a face for radio to begin
with. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't need more damage. Yeah. So we were talking about the problems that you see. And I think, too, a lot of times people, let's educate them on the doctors that they see. I mean, a lot of times we associate chiropractors immediately, but there's different levels of chiropractors, and ones that are better at making better notes for cases for you and different things like that. So again, that's why we try to get them to call you first, because there's several things. First of all, don't be talking to the other insurance company and saying things, because those, those few things can hurt you early on if you get into early conversations before they talk to you. But then also seeing the right doctor.
Yeah, and it's really important. So chiropractors and physical therapists and orthopods that deal with spinal injuries and soft tissue spinal injuries are really good at what they do. But they're generally speaking, and this is generalities, but generally they go 8, 10, maybe 12 weeks. And then you're either better or you've got other issues that you need to get an MRI, you need to figure out what's going on with any sort of injections. There's other stuff going on if they can't fix the problem. So when I get a client that's had chiropractic visits for a year and a half before coming to see me, that's a red flag to me, and it's a red flag to the insurance company saying, wait a second, this treatment is a little out of line here with regard to what should have happened. That chiropractor or physical therapist should have told them, if they hadn't gotten better over that time period, hey, maybe you should go get a consultation with someone to see if something else is going on. And the way that affects you is they basically reduce the amount of what you've already paid in medical expenses and say you should have done something else, and don't give you credit for doing the rest of that treatment. And so it ends up you have higher medical expenses, but your recovery is lower than what the medical, in comparison. Right. And so that's where people get sideways. And so, you know, we refer and we get referrals from lots of chiropractors in the metro area. Mm-hmm. And generally speaking, all of them do a really good job. But there's a case or two where I have to call and say, why are you continuing to do this? Right. Just so that we understand. And obviously I'm not a doctor, but we see enough of these cases that we get to see trends. And the insurance companies do the same thing. And so when they, and they have medical professionals now on staff that will look at these things and say, they always say it's too much, unless you don't do anything. And then they say, well, you really weren't hurt. You know, so they get you coming and going. But the point is that you should follow the advice of your doctor until it seems like you've been doing it a long time and not getting better.
Right.
And that's where we can really help give you some guideline about, hey, generally speaking, this is what we see. And I don't like to settle the cases then before we get some of these other diagnostic tests done, because you may have a bigger issue that if I resolve the case, mm-hmm. I can't open it up again.
Sure.
And those are hard cases.
What are the positives or negatives when it's maybe the same insurance company? You know, if somebody hits you and they both got the same insurance company.
Sometimes it's really good. It depends upon the insurance company, quite frankly. There's supposed to be, so the departments, the bodily injury department, and let's say the uninsured, underinsured motorist department of these insurance companies, there's supposed to be a wall in between them, theoretically, that they're not really sharing information. But I don't think that wall is very thick, it's pretty porous. And so we do see that to some degree. It really comes down to the insurance company and how their claims practice is, generally speaking. There's a couple of insurance companies out there that are just horrible to deal with. And so their claims departments are horrible to deal with on both ends. And so a lot of times I've got a case right now where I'm suing the insurance company over their claims practices because I think they're acting in bad faith. And we'll see where those go. But those things happen. But generally speaking, it should be good. I mean, there are insurance companies out there that are really good, and they really are concerned when the same policyholders are their clients or their patrons, because they try to make sure that both of them are taken care of, both the people that caused the accident getting their claims done so that they don't have the anxiety of, you know, having this claim held over their head, and then the people that are injured, that they also can be able to get their claims resolved in a reasonable manner after they're done treating.
Right. Real quick, in our last couple of minutes, motorcyclist and bicyclist. Yeah. Bicyclist, I want to hit first. And again, I'm not a bicyclist, and I mean, they got a right to ride in designated area. But man, I'm just telling you, it seems like there are a lot. They just want to take the whole.
They do. And
the road.
And the interesting thing about bicycle cases is there's no middle ground on bicycle cases. You're either an advocate for bicyclists, or you're kind of the belief that they believe that they are holier than thou when they're on the road. Mm-hmm. Because there's certainly a segment of the bicycling population that believe that they own the road. And they're very much advocates for their position on the roadway, right? When when they can get really hurt. And I've had a number of really bad bicycle cases. And the best thing that I can say about bicycle cases in general is make sure that you're on the right side of the roadway, that you're staying in that that 2 foot edge. I mean, I understand that you may want to be in the whole thing, but from the standpoint of you get hit by a car, if you're in the middle of the roadway, I'm going to have claims adjusters or individuals that are making decisions about what the value of your claim is. They're going to look at the liability portion. And if you're taking up the whole roadway, they're going to probably cite you for some liability where it really isn't necessary. The other thing is riding your bike on walkways, making sure that where you're riding is legal to ride. Sometimes in Denver in particular, there are certain areas where bikes can be and where they can't be. And a bicyclist can get cited for, let's say, riding through a crosswalk where it's walking only. And so if you get hit in that crosswalk and you're not supposed to be on your bike, that's going to be an issue too, because the defense will be making the argument, well, the driver of the car didn't see you because you just darted out in front of them on your bike where people would normally be walking. So those are sorts of things that we look at on a case-by-case basis to figure
out.
And
I've seen a lot, too, real quick. I've seen a lot, too, wearing GoPros as the bicyclist. So you as a motorist, we as a motorist, we got to understand you can't harass, although you might want to harass, but they might have a video of you doing something, too, that gets you in trouble.
Yep. I just always assume whatever I'm doing, somebody's recording me. I mean, you just have to do that anymore, I think, because in our society, that's what's going on the majority of the time. And it's good and bad, but you just gotta watch. It's like the interaction with a police officer. Mm-hmm. You've always gotta be on your best behavior because that's gonna serve you best in the long run.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Kevin, always great information. 303-806-8886, fleschlawfirm.com, FLESCHlawfirm.com. Thank you for joining us today. Be sure and check out our website, haystackhelp.com, and our helpline is always there for you, 303-333-HELP, 303-333-4357. Hope you have a great rest of your day, and leave it right here on KLZ 560.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.